Okay, let me, as a group, I just want you to think for a second and ask yourself some questions. Who was the leader of your group? Who was the person who just contributed the most to making you get the job done? And if that's the case, tell me what it took for that person to get the rest of you to connect and make the mission happen.
He was bigger and louder.
It works. Down, what was the first thing that happened? Why do you think that was? It's just a question. There is no right or wrong answer to it. Jeff? Do you feel like as a group you were more of a team at the end of the exercise than you were at the beginning of the exercise?
Yes.
Did you have to communicate with one another?
Yes.
Okay. It's a really good exercise in terms of just being helpful in identifying who your leaders are, who that group is, but you've got to be able to try things out where you work together to be able to see if you can actually accomplish something together. And sometimes what you think you set out to do is going to be completely opposite to what you started in your planning. And it may take some time to retweak and rethink. Now, one of the things I really want to do, and I want you to, it's going to take a moment for you to process and think, possibly. On the sixth day, God created man. On the seventh day, he rested. On the eighth day, man created God. Which means very often what we have done is we've created our own image of God that's comfortable to us. And in church structure, we've created a structure that's comfortable to us. And we've lived with it for a long time. Now we've discovered that maybe it's not quite working the way that we thought it would. And we all know that doing the same thing the same way and expecting different results is a definition of insanity. But sometimes we think of fresh expressions or new mission in our church, but we're still in the framework of old thinking. And we have to reframe our thinking in order to accomplish a new mission. And that's going to take some time. And so you may have built a team, you have your core people around you. I remember being a church growth course in school way back when, and we had to do these projects and assignments. You always had a church of 350 people, you always had a full budget in front of you, and you had volunteers who loved you. Those assignments were really easy, but none of them were realistic. And the minute you graduated and hit your first church, you went, what did I just learn? Because none of it is making any sense out here with real people. And immediately you had to reframe what was happening if you were going to connect to that church and have any sense of success about what was happening as a mission or a goal in that church. If you consider for some congregations, they've been together for a very long time. And they've only done it one way and they've only understood it from one way. And now you're going to come in and you're going to say to them, we want to do something new. We want to give you a fresh expression of something. We have this wonderful team of people who are geared and ready to do that, but we still have an old mindset. And I want to challenge you a little bit about what that looks like so that if you're going to retain this team and you're going to make them work really, really well together, you've got to engage them in projects. And projects are important, but more importantly, you have to equip them. Ephesians is pretty clear about we equip people for the work of ministry, right? We don't equip people so we can do the ministry. We equip them so they can do ministry, and we can be cheerleaders. And sometimes, because we're the one who carries the vision, we often carry the majority of the role that's happening, and we forget that there's a whole team of people out there who are eager, who have bought into your vision, who have bought into what God is doing, and then we don't use them for anything. And for instance, one of the things that you have to know about your team is who they are, more than just what spiritual gifts they have. And I want to... there is a guy out there, I don't know whether any of you have read any of his stuff, but Mike Breen. I don't see his stuff in the bookshop here, but Mike Breen is excellent. And if you haven't read any of his things, you need to read them.
Mike Breen?
Mike Breen, B-R-E-E-N. He was an Anglican minister in England, has moved to the States, is very key on discipleship, but missional discipleship with good reason. Because there's a couple of things that Mike says that I think are really important if you're going to train a team and make it work well. One of the things is, he says, what we do is we give people a new project and we don't tell them why. We say we want to do this fresh expression, but we haven't given them any training or any reason as to why it's happening. We're just doing something new. And people may not see that as either discipleship or a missional component. We just want to go do mission. We just want to be the next social agency in town. We want to do the right thing, but we forget why we're doing it. Ultimately, first and foremost, we can never apologize for being the church. We are the church, and we stand for Jesus Christ first and foremost. Everything else we do has to come from that platform, or we are just another wonderful person out there who's offering hope for a day, but not for eternity. And it's too important that if Jesus gave us the mandate of making disciples, then we have to train people to believe that. And we have to train our group leaders to be disciples so that mission comes out of their heart, not out of a sense of duty. And in some mainline churches and in some denominations, it gets real easy to work so that God will give you what you want because you've done the right thing. But God, I worked at the mission 3 days a week this week. And I talked to that homeless guy, and I've done all the right things, so now you owe me. That's God creating man, or man creating God. We do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, not because we get an extra reward from God. I don't know whether any of you saw the movie Just a Little Faith at Christmas time. It was a Hallmark movie with Mitch Albom, which is a true story between Mitch's life in terms of his rabbi and this Baptist pastor who have formed his faith. And his rabbi, on one hand, has said to him, Mitch, will you write my eulogy? And the rabbi's about 80 years old at that point, and so Mitch thinks this is going to be a short thing, but 9 years later, he's hung out with this rabbi for 9 years. And he's learned a whole lot about the rabbi's life. On the other hand, this Baptist pastor that he's hanging out with is a former drug dealer who's made a bargain with God, and God has graciously entered his life, and now he's working with this homeless congregation. And Mitch is being mentored by both of these men. But one of the things he says to his rabbi is, okay, so you have 3 minutes with God. What are you going to do with those 3 minutes? And he talks about it, and he says, the last question I would ask God is, I've done all the right things, I've helped all the people, I've, you know, this whole list of accomplishments. And Mitch says, so what do you think God's answer is going to be? And he said, God's going to go, okay, so you did what you were supposed to do. What do you want me to do? Sometimes we think we're doing all this for the reward. Can I just let you know we're doing it because God's grace and love transformed us? And now we want to share that with someone else so they can experience the same thing that we did. And it has nothing to do whether we've earned any right to anything else. We've done the right thing because that's what God called us to do. If that's what you will instill in your leadership team, you will reframe their thinking. Because too often we think it's about the job rather than the being. And you heard in the session this morning, you're my beloved son, and he hadn't even started his ministry, It was just at the baptism before he'd done anything. God's love is unconditional. And so how we treat other people has to be the same way. It's about who they are, not about what they do or don't do. And so if you can take your leadership team and you can reframe how they think things, it makes a difference. Now, one of the things that we are really famous for doing, and I don't know about you, but it used to irritate the heck out of me. And after reading Mike's book, Passionate Life, it changed that for me. And one of it is we have spiritual gifts. How many of you know what your spiritual gifts are? How many of you ever taken that spiritual gifts test, either on the internet or in a course or somewhere? So we all have our badges, you know, like in school, and we wear them nicely and neatly along here. I have the gift of. Okay. So we do that to all the people in our church, so we know what their gifts are, and we do this asset mapping. We do this great inventory of spiritual gifts. And we get 8 people who are hospitality people. Then we decide we're going to throw a big banquet, and we call those 8 people, and none of them want to volunteer. And you go, but you have the gift of hospitality. What is your problem? What we haven't done is put the platform underneath. And I know that in churches, we often talk about the 5-fold ministry gifts, so the prophet, teacher, evangelist, much like they were talking about earlier today. If you could think about those just slightly different, reframe your thinking of those. They are gifts to the church. They are meant for the church, but each one of us has one of those platforms underneath our spiritual gifts. Finding out what those platforms are is huge. One of the fastest ways to find out what your platform is listen to someone pray. Because apostles will pray for every empty building in town to be filled with Christians. And every building they go by, they can see it as a new church or a new fresh expression. There isn't a building. I'm terrible for that. It's like sometimes God just shut my brain off because just because it's an empty building in St. Thomas doesn't mean I have to fill it, but I can see the picture for it. So I know where I sit. There are pastoral people who pray for the needs of the people. They pray for healing for people. They have a real heart for that caring. Nurses often fit within that category of pastoral care. Evangelists want to see the whole world once Jesus. And so they pray for every person who could ever hear the gospel. Teachers pray for people's eyes to be opened, for their understanding to take place. Any of you ever pray this stuff? You know what's there? And prophets can see what's going to happen next. God, you just know what the future is going to be like. Help us move with you. Give us discernment. So we all have that platform underneath what we do. If we understand the platform of our core team, then we know where their gifts fit, and we don't put round pegs in square holes. We actually put squares in square holes and round pegs in round holes, and people like you a whole lot more, and they're far more efficient at what they do. Now, you can minister in an area that is not your passion for a while, but you can't stay there forever or you're going to burn out because it's not who God called you to be. And so someone who is apostolic is the perfect person to do hospitality for an Alpha course or an H2O course or anything that is along that line, because they understand this is about the bigger picture, and that's why they would serve. Someone with pastoral care is going to use hospitality to make a meal for a family who needs it. And so if I can rearrange how you are doing your job so you fit both your platform and your gift, you're far more effective on the team, and you're happy about being there. Those are huge things. Those are the things and the rights that we owe to people. It's interesting for us in St. Thomas, one of the big things is that we have a big question about what does the community value most about people in St. Thomas? Well, outside of the church, they said our volunteers. This city would never run without its volunteers. Volunteers are highly primary in our community. When we went inside the church doors and we asked them some questions, they said, we can't get a volunteer for anything. We don't have any volunteers. Just miserable. And part of me wonders if a volunteer in the community knows what they want to do, and so they volunteer for the area that fits them. And in church, because there's an opening, we just plug you in. And we burn you out before you ever get to where you're supposed to be. And really, 80% of people should not be sitting still while 20% of the people do the work. It should be the reverse. Everybody should be involved. And, you know, when I talked about that whole issue around the Santa Claus parade weekend, we had 95% participation from our congregation. But they were all involved from a different area where their gift fit, and so they felt like a whole team making that event happen. And everybody was part of it, and no one felt like, oh, I can't be part of that, or I don't understand that, or whatever, because everybody got to choose where they were going to be. Now, the best thing that you can do for your core team is set up a person of succession for you, because you never know what tomorrow looks like. And if the whole vision and mission depends on you, and something happens to you, what happens tomorrow? And I, personal example for me was, I don't know, 6 years ago, I guess, when I was diagnosed with cancer, and I had to take 8 months off. In some ways, like parental leave, right? If you pull yourself out of the picture, what happens to the rest of your team? Will they be able to carry on the mission? Will they understand it? Will they have valued it enough? Will they be equipped enough for it to run regardless of whether you're there or not? On Tuesday, we talked about everybody taking a sabbatical for 3 or 4 months. And I was that man in a church plant, can you afford to take 3 or 4 months off? Because I took 2 weeks off and thought, oh my gosh, what just happened? Which was a huge lesson in learning, okay, they're not ready yet, but we're getting there. And they accomplished a whole lot. It was just a dynamic that needed to happen. So we always have to have someone that we're mentoring who can step in at any given moment to take our place. Okay? That's hugely important. Jesus did it. And in fact, if you were to think of anything that Jesus did that would really be about training his leaders and disciples, so to speak, he had 3.5 years with them. But probably the best equipping moment would have been the John 14 to 17 moment, where he's like, okay, guys, this is the plan. I'm leaving now. And I'm leaving this all in your hands. And I'm going to be really nice to you, because if I go, I'm going to send the Holy Spirit, who's going to hang out with you and empower you to do everything that I've ever done, and you're going to do more of that. And he gives them the whole list of all the things that they're going to need to do in order for the mission to succeed. And I'm going to guess that we're sitting here 2,000 and some years later that maybe they succeeded. Because there's always been a succession plan of someone else who has been trained to pick up the ministry. And we need to do that with our team. If we have a succession person, every person on your core team also needs someone to be their succession person. If you're going to model it, you want them to do exactly the same thing. So nothing ever relies on us, but we are at the moment what God is using, but let's be prepared in case we're not here tomorrow. Will God's mission for this still continue? And you want to build into their life good skills and good levels of critical thinking. I have to tell you guys, I don't think I can emphasize it enough. Church is all about the heart. But if we don't use our thinking, we really are lost. And we have to use both together. They matter together. One is not more important than the other. But if we don't use what God has given us to think critically about where we are, we miss so much about what he might have to say to us. What does it look like? How does it feel? If we can do that at all, we have helped people. So there are two questions that will help build critical thinking skills that you need to ask your team over and over and over again. The first one is, what do you think? And the second one is, how do you feel? They are not yes or no questions. How do you think about the vision? What do you think about what we're doing right now? Allowing people input into the discussion makes a difference. If you do all the talking, and sometimes, you know, in a room like this, someone at the front is doing all the talking, and you guys are all like, it's after lunch, please go away. And you're trying to absorb all of this stuff in your brain, is not necessarily the way that you would have a conversation around a mission project, or your fresh expression, or your church. It is about interaction in the conversation. It's about everybody's opinion coming to the table so that we discern as a group well together. And trusting people to be able to express their thoughts and feelings. That matters. Secondly, is you need to equip them. Whatever you think that they need to go from good to excellent, you need to add. For us, we've had a year, okay? I have some wonderful people on my team. God has gifted us well. I feel incredibly blessed to be surrounded by the people that are in St. Thomas right now who are part of this plant. But if I just assume that they're going to get it all by osmosis, then I've done them a disservice. And I need to keep pouring into their life over and over and over again so that they can pour into other people's lives. If I want them to reframe their thinking, I have to provide opportunity for that to happen. So on Monday night, we're leading this course called Leadership Development for the Nonprofit Sector. It's learning, teaching them about self-awareness. It's about them coming to terms with what their strengths are. It's about teaching them what it means to be an exemplary leader, not just any leader. It's about finding out personality style so they understand how they connect to one another. Because there's nothing worse than having someone on the team that irritates the heck out of you and you have no idea why. They just don't get it like you do. But if you understand that one is gold and one is orange, it makes all the difference in the world. And you kind of go, oh, that's your creative side coming out. Let me put my details with it. Maybe we can actually work together instead of fighting each other in a meeting. So they're spending 12 weeks doing that. Well, this past weekend, because we've had a year, and you know what? We had a good report at the end of a year. It was a fair report. We had some positive things. We have some red flag things that we need to work on. In a year, I think we've done really, really well. But if I got this same report 3 years in, I'd be really disappointed. It would really bug me that that's only as far as we had come. And so we did 2 days last weekend at a retreat center doing strategic planning with a facilitator outside of the church community who has been intrigued and offered his services pro bono, so it was like a real gift from God, because this guy is really good. And as much as we wanted to plan strategy, what we did was we took our mission statement and we pulled it apart into three areas, and we said, okay, how do we make this work? Do we agree with the three things in our mission statement? If we're going to do that, how do we build cohesion into that? How do we build adaptability for people into that? How do people know that that's really what we're all about? And we also brought the spouses of our advisory team, our core team, with us. Because for your leaders, they are giving huge amounts of time and energy. I never want the church to be the third spouse. Do you know how many couples think there's one spouse that thinks that their spouse is married to the church and spends more time at church than they do at home? And this competition is set up between family and church, and God never, ever intended that. And so I want to honor those families, and if you're going to give me your time, then I want to honor you by bringing your spouse along because you're also part of the decision process. It's important that we honor families and give them that opportunity so that when we come back with a plan, there are no surprises to anybody. All the spouses are in on it. They know what the plan is. They know what amount of work is going to be involved in this. How do we learn how to balance that as a family? How much time can we actually give? Because it's God, family, and then church, right? And we have to honor that. So when you're training people and you're asking for time out, please make sure that you're investing in their time well and that you're investing in their family's time well. Those are important things. And then after you've trained them, please give them something to do. This mic is on, but maybe I can say it anyway because it's my pet peeve and it's okay. It's just an observation. It is not a judgment call against something that happened in a lot of churches. But a few years ago, a number of churches jumped on a bandwagon because it was the next cool thing out there to do, and it was called 40 Days of Purpose. And churches shut down all of their programs, because that was one of the things that was supposed to happen, so that you could run this 40 Days of Purpose, so that you can engage people's hearts and minds, so they're going to go out there and take the world in 40 days. They had Bible studies together. They did all kinds of wonderful things. But what churches didn't do was set up what was going to happen after the 40 days. So in 40 days, you had all these impassioned people. You'd shut down all your programs, and you hadn't prepared for all of that passion to be poured back into your church. And you had a whole lot of disgruntled people because they had all this stuff ready to go and nowhere to put it. So if you're going to equip people and you're going to work with people, you better give them something to do with it. You may say to them, okay, we're working on this. What do you see yourself doing in 10 weeks? How are you going to use these tools in order for you to move forward and be part of this community in a new, effective way? That makes a total difference if we would just plan our steps along the way, which is huge for someone who's orange to say, let's put some details in place. I have about this much gold. I've just seen so many people who are ready to do something for God, and we haven't thought far enough about what that looks like for them. And so if we can work together and you can get people to have the conversation about your Kingston North, right? You're at the beginning stages. You find three dreamers who just get it, who want to do something for God. Then there is almost like you have this incredible opportunity to sit over a coffee and say, if you could wake up tomorrow and be doing the very thing that's your passion and desire and dream, what would it look like? And often some of the best ideas about where you're headed are there. And then the second question you're going to ask, though, is, does that line up with the vision that we've put in place for this project or mission or church plant or whatever? Because there will be lots and lots and lots of good ideas. And I think Satan's best tool against the church is great ministry opportunities. Because there is always something to do. And what it does is we think we need to take them all on, and we forget to stay focused on what God called us to do. And so we get our hands out there in 1,000 things, and we miss the one thing that we were supposed to concentrate on. And so when people come up with good ideas, if they know what the vision is, it's really easy for you to say to them at that moment, does this line up with our vision? How do you see it fitting into us living out this statement that we have decided is our DNA? If it doesn't fit, say that's a great idea. Let's put it in the parking lot for 4 or 5 years or for a little bit, because it may come back to be part of another possibility of something. It may just not be for now. So can I find a way that you can work on something with that same amount of passion that is something that fits within the vision? That really keeps us focused on where God wants us to be. In some ways, that's like plugging someone in. If you could draw a picture and put a stick person in the center, and at the top of it, you have this thing called plug-in, what you want to do is plug people into the mission. You want to sell them on the vision. You want to equip them to make that happen. You want to pray for them every day. This is the team of people that God has gifted you with. Do never, ever take them for granted. Especially in this time when people move in and out so easily. Pray for them. Invest in them. Get to know them. If you plug them into a program, will you charge them up and be their best cheerleader? So often, leaders have ego problems. And if someone came up with a better idea than we do, we resent it. And if it's going really successfully, we shut it down, because it wasn't our idea. Please let people succeed. Truthfully, you look better in the long run. Yes?
You just mentioned about a vision, and I must have missed it. When did you come up with a vision?
In the last session.
In the last session?
Yep. It's one of the very first things you do. You pray for the team, and you pray for what your vision will look like, so you have something to introduce them to.
Is that something you present, or is that something you come up with as a team?
I think as a leader, it's your vision. Because if you don't carry it, no one else is going to. And if it's a joint project at that moment, I think we miss some of the things. Now, when it comes to the mission of how we live out the vision, we're going to have the conversation. But that vision has got to start from somewhere. You're sitting there looking at Kingston North. You're looking at your church for what 3 years out looks like from here. You're in the middle of a church plant in Ottawa. But if you didn't have something that started the whole process, you're not going to fall into team. Someone has got to have been impassioned that stayed awake way too many nights because it was eating at you. And you're going to find like-minded people, but someone has got to carry that vision and be reminded of it over and over and over again, because it's really easy to lose sight of a vision. And if it's not yours, and it's a joint effort of a number of things, you might only carry part of that vision. I don't think anything starts in church if it's not implanted here first. We have to own it. And I know it's really easy to say, what was your idea? Yeah, I don't think so. God doesn't quite give us that. Okay? So that's where the vision in my mind. What is it that you really want to do? What is it that keeps you up? What is it that drives you over and over and over again to do something different?
And when is the listening coming?
That will all be part of that. Those first 6 months are the time that you'll pray, you'll listen to God, you'll listen to your community. You'll listen to all of the people around you, both in the church and outside of the church, because often that's a totally different conversation. I've been beefing on this just because I can. You give me this sidebar of an ADD moment, just so you know. And for some of you, this is really important because you're going to come up with a name for whatever it is that you're doing, just like we came up with Destination. A lot of churches at this moment are changing the names of their churches on the door so that people will come to their church in the community, because now it says community church, which means we're really accepting, but we haven't changed anything inside. But we think if we've changed the name, obviously we've done something really tremendous. And I always have this beef about, why are we changing names? Why are we apologizing for who we are? If we are who we are, then let's live it out in a different way than we've been living it out if we want the attention of the community. And I think of the sign on your church. What? You mean you've been open for 80 years? And so I remember in our church going through this process that we thought we were going to change the name. And I went, please, let's not change the name. They wanted to take Presbyterian off of it. They wanted to make it this community thing. I went, you know what? If it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And so I put this banner together that was supposed to be on a billboard that had three rubber ducks on it. It said, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Find out why we're a church. It never made it to publication because the church was too afraid to take the risk. And it's okay. We put up one with little hands with a palm tree growing out of it. Come grow with us, you know, that we all have on our website. Part of it is you're going to have to decide what your new church is, and so, or the name of whatever it is, so people can identify with it. So someone said to us, well, how did you come up with the name Destination? And did you just pull it out of a hat? And I went, no, actually, we had a conversation with a number of people of what names for churches could be, and we dreamt about it. Then we put this survey together, and it had three questions on the survey. If you were to go to a new bar in town, based solely on the name, which bar would you choose? If you were to go to a new coffee shop in town, based solely on the name, which name would you choose? And if you were to go to a new church in town, based solely on the name, which would you choose? And then we put that survey out all over the world, in St. Thomas, in coffee shops, in high schools, and inside the church, outside of the church, and that was the top name that came out of the 10 that we had listed, that we kind of brainstormed around. A lot of people have a committee inside their church making that change, but they haven't had any conversation outside of the church. So those listening steps will be at the very beginning of just finding out what it is out there. Who are the people in your community? What do they represent? What are their demographics? What are the issues in their lives? Usually you can tell by inside your church what your issues are in your community, but we would all say we don't have problems inside the church. However, that was a sidebar. But when you're choosing the name for your organization or your fresh expression, please talk to the people you hope to encounter about what they think it might look like, because they might show up then. But if it's all done internally, we've missed something. But at some point, you will have to decide what it is that you want to do in your community, and then build that team around that vision, and then you're going to have to equip those guys and pray for them and do all the things. So if you've plugged them in, you want to charge them up and be their cheerleader. You want to root for them. If they have a good idea, celebrate it. You know when it's the best is when it doesn't matter who gets credit for the idea. We're in it because of Jesus, not for ourselves. That's when it makes sense. And if you've charged them up, let them live it out. Give them permission to act. Give them permission to think. I remember some people who were coming from a church background to become part of our core group. And I remember one of the ladies saying, "Every time I come to church and sit in a pew, I die a little more each week." Something caught my heart in the middle of that statement. And she said, and one of the other ladies said, "Yeah, I understand, because I always feel like if I have coffee with my neighbor and share Jesus, that doesn't count for anything because it wasn't sanctioned as a church program. And we've only let people actually count for ministry what we've done that's been a church box around it. And we've missed that what we really want to do is get rid of the secular and sacred and just make us who we are." And so when you allow people to just become who they are without making those definitions of the side, you get a whole person who's going to be part of that, and they get to live it out. Now, in March, and I don't want to give the whole thing, I don't know how many, if any of you would even be there, but Wycliffe does an evangelism banquet, the Institute of Evangelism. The title of that talk that I'm giving that night is called Benevolent People versus Benevolent Funds. You want your core team to be benevolent people. Just before Christmas, someone said to me, "Do we have a benevolent fund?" I said, "No, we have benevolent people." In a lot of churches who cry poor, we have a benevolent fund, which means we need a committee to decide who qualifies to get the funding. Then we have to decide where the need is, and we have to go through this whole process, and if you don't qualify to our rules, we don't help you. And just recently this week, I had someone say to me, they were part of this discussion with a pastor who said, this man showed up at the door of the church in desperate need for baby formula.
Baby what?
Baby formula.
Okay.
They were a young couple who had a new baby, and the mom had been diagnosed with breast cancer, so could not nurse the baby. The medical expenses had taken them out, and he was desperate for formula, and this pastor said, "I'm sorry, we can't help you. It's not in our fund." Anybody's heart just break at this moment? If we're benevolent people, then we meet the need that God presents in front of us, and we're ready to do whatever it takes to show God's love in a practical way to someone. But we have often got caught in these little boxes, and we've trained people to think in those boxes. I'm going to ask that you reframe your core team to be benevolent people who live it out 24/7. That will be the best thing that you ever do for any leader in your church, is to believe that God matters from Monday at 7 a.m. to the following Monday morning at 6:59. It's a whole lifestyle that you want to engage people in, because that's when you begin to change people. That's the heart, that's the voice that you want for whatever expression of church you do. Because we are the church. It has nothing to do with the building we're in. And sometimes we get caught believing it's about the building, and what could we possibly do with the building? That's another benevolent fund. What do we do with the people inside the building so that they can act to a heart that says, I'm all about the Great Commission. And in whatever expression that God wants me to use that in, I'm ready to go. We want them to be able to live it out. And the last thing you want to do for your leaders at that moment is help them pass it on. It's a succession plan, but it's also about allowing them what it feels like to lead someone else to God. The Holy Spirit's always going to do it. We all have a God complex. We all think we're going to save people. Let's just get that out of our way. I think last year I said, what's the difference between us and God? And the answer, of course, is he knows he's not us. Think about it for a minute. But sometimes we set ourselves up to be God for people. That's not what Jesus did, and it's certainly not what he asked us to do. He said, everything I do is so that you can see the Father. And everything that we do should be so that people can see who Jesus and the Father are. It isn't about us. And if we can instill those values in your core team, you just might change the world. You might have an opportunity to do something incredible in your community that you never thought about if you take your hands off and trust God's hands to put the plan together. And if you help people to understand that core component, I guess if there was a simple way of saying it, in some ways it's like, I do, you watch. I do, you help. You do, I help. You do, I watch. It's about equipping people for ministry. Sheep give birth to sheep. Shepherds do not normally give birth to sheep. They give birth to other shepherds, usually. But if we think it's all about us, then we try to do that. And God created us as a community together for us to take on the responsibility of leadership, which is really about inciting people or inspiring people with a vision that will help them express Jesus to the world. If you can do that with your core team, you can do anything. And I want to say that, you know what, it's not simple. And sometimes, you know, you can stand up here and be incredibly inspiring or, you know, give you this big picture. It's hard work. And don't ever think that you're not going to wake up some days going. So the text message in the morning to the world or your Facebook status is working from home today, learning to be inspired. Really, you're saying, I want a day off. I don't want to see any of you. I don't want to deal with your needs today. We will all have those days. But there are other days you're up before your alarm is off because you can't wait for what God is going to do in someone's life for that day. But know that it's going to take something. It's not just this easy piece of thing that falls in your lap and we go, aha. I've probably never worked in this hard in 30 years, and I've had 4 other church plants. This one is so brand new, raw. It really takes a lot. Maybe I was younger back then, I don't know. I have to admit, I'm probably over the 50 now. That means I can quote myself. I like that line this morning. I got a couple years on him. But let me tell you, I can't think of anything else I wish that I was doing right now. There is nothing that motivates me more to get up in the morning than to know I'm going to hang out with a bunch of people who don't have a clue yet who Jesus is, but they're beginning to discover it. And we're just sharing life together. And I guess when someone asked some of our leaders what church was all about, they said, it's about fun. I was like, that's great. The orange side of me and the party is coming out in them. But you know what? It is about fun. It's about celebration. It's not about palliative care. We don't want to make you happy till you die. We really want to inspire you to live out the gospel mission in the reality of everything that God has in mind for the community around us. A few years ago, I was trying to figure out what God was doing. You ever had those days? I don't know. I don't have a clue what I'm doing. God, I'm available. I'm open. I don't know what you're doing with my life. I'm confused. I'm here. But tell me where I'm supposed to go. Any of you ever been there? And in the middle of all of that and just trying to figure out what it was that God was doing, a whole new chapter of life began to unfold for me. And I probably began to see life from a totally different place about what could happen in ministry if we would just step outside the door. And all of the creative things that could possibly happen in that moment. And I think about where I am now in terms of that. And this is a story that I can't even begin to tell you how much my heart just jumps at how faithful God is in the process of where you are at different stages of your life and how you end up where you are. And every once in a while, we get a glimpse of heaven. You ever have that moment you work with people and then they disappear and you have no idea where they've gone, whether you've had any impact in their lives at all, and then God just gives you a gift? Okay. I'm in St. Thomas. We're leading our first Alpha course, just so I get a handle on the community. We have 25 people who show up at this restaurant to take this course. The only Christians are the leaders. Everyone else are these raw baby believers, basically. One night, I am sitting across from two young women. And one of them is a young mom who has a little guy who's maybe 3 or 4 months old. And the other girl sitting beside her is a young lady who has been part of our core team, who is an incredible evangelist, who has an awesome story. And as we're sitting there having this conversation, the one girl says to me, "So where did you used to volunteer?" And I thought, well, you're much younger than I am. It was probably in a different city, so I don't know that it would have a lot of reference. I'm not from St. Thomas. I actually probably did most of my volunteering the last 20 years in London. She said, no, I'm from London. Tell me more. Where did you volunteer? I said, well, you know what? I probably hung out a lot at my kids' school. I was one of those moms who just hung out all the time, filled in where teachers needed me to fill in, and headed a Mothers Who Care group. So we prayed for the teachers every week and for the students of the school. This young lady said to me, "Tell me what school that was." So I named the school, and she said, "That's why I know you, because I was part of that school then. And I remember you from when you used to walk in the hallways." And the other girl who was part of our core team said, "And I was at that school at the same time too." And I just kind of went, oh my gosh, God, how many years later in a totally different city, people I prayed for 15 years ago are now sitting in front of me celebrating your grace and a journey of faith that they've begun. And I was like awestruck by that. But the story gets even better. One of the other young ladies from that course, and some of you saw it in the Anglican Journal after the talk last year about having the baptism in our hot tub, and her picture was in there. And so as we're having this baptismal service in the hot tub in our backyard, that's what hot tubs are best for. The water's warm, it's good. Whatever it takes. And she had invited a number of people who had become part of her faith community, as well as people from the church, just as she had connected to a home that she had been part of and a number of people. There was a couple that were there, and I guess I didn't really recognize because there was such a group of people in our backyard. And someone was saying, "So have you sold your house?" And we were just talking, and someone said, "Well, I'm going to pray for you that your house sells really quick so you can get to St. Thomas," and all of that stuff happened. I never really thought anything more about that. I said, "Thank you." They prayed. In December of this year, just before Christmas, I had a lady walk into the church office, and she said, "Is it possible for you to come outside for a minute?" My mom is in the car. She's 90, and she would like to talk to you for a minute. And it's kind of a slushy day, so it would be easier if you came out to the sidewalk rather than her coming into the church. She said she's been praying for you. She just wants to know some of the story. I was like, I'm out the door. So I'm on the sidewalk, kneeling down, looking at this car, and I think, we're doing a drug deal in the middle of St. Thomas. This looks really good. Considering who's across the street from us, that's probably not such a bad thought. However, we start having this conversation, and so I'm filling her in on how the miracle of our house selling, how we ended up in the place that we're in now, all of those kinds of things. We talked about how the hot tub at the new place has now been the place for more baptisms that have happened, and just some of the... And then it dawned on me. This woman who had walked into the church, her husband was my son's grade 3 teacher at the same school at the same time. I prayed for him 15 years ago. His mother-in-law and family are now praying for us as a church. So sometimes we wonder about why we're in the situations that we're in. I don't know that sometimes we're not planting seed. And just every once in a while, God gives you a glimpse that when you were faithful here, now you get to see what that looks like because you've hung in to the game and you haven't let go. And I'm going to encourage you that as you reframe everything that you do for God, at a conference like this, this is a great place as a think tank to make that kind of thing happen. Will you know that you're planting seed, that you're going to harvest, but it's never about you alone. It's about you working with a committed group of people who are you are willing to invest in the same way that Jesus invested in his disciples, who have since given us 2,000 years of gospel-filled history. And you are going to be the next generation of that story. In truth, the next verse in Hebrews, it says, by faith, John did. By faith, Jeff did. By faith. What's the rest of the story if you will invest in other people the way that Jesus has invested in you? Build a good, strong team, but invest in their lives in whatever it takes to equip them to do what God is calling them to do. I think we're done.